David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion workplace pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Hi, this is Stacey from The Advisor, and today I'm very excited because we have Dr. Lurie today on our show. Dr. Lurie is a Harvard Medical School graduate who has practiced both emergency medicine and psychiatry, and he has studied genetics at Johns Hopkins and Harvard, and the Pasteur Institute in Paris. He was also exposed to seminars led by 4 Nobel Prize winners, 2 who discovered the structure of DNA, and 2 who discovered mRNA. And today he has a lot of information he wants to go over. So he has a sequence that he wants to begin with so you understand the whole meeting and the whole synopsis of what he's trying to get across. So before I say anything else, I'm going to let Dr. Lurie take over. So Dr. Lurie, tell everybody about yourself and what you do. And it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Okay. Well, it's really a pleasure to be here. It really is. About myself, well, I think you hit the highlights right there, at least in terms of what's relevant to discussion today. So here's what my goal was. My goal was to get deeper than psychology, deeper than the unconscious, something I know about as a psychiatrist, and really get down to the genetics of what we're all about.
Right.
Because I thought that that's the only way we can kind of work backwards and see what's going on today, especially in politics, really in society. Politics reflects what's going on in society, and it certainly is doing that now. So basically, I didn't know where to start, but I thought I'd start with the basics of life, survival and reproduction. Mm-hmm. Well, survival is pretty obvious, but every creature, every one of us, plants too, have to have a way to reproduce, or else the species dies out. Mm-hmm. So I started with that. Then, because humans are pretty complicated, we have this overlay of culture that kind of obscures everything. I thought I'd look for a lower species that doesn't have culture, that just has genes that transmits behavior from one generation to the next. And basically, I came up with birds. Birds reproduce in a nest. We produce in a nest, in a house. We call it the nest sometimes. Birds feed their very vulnerable offspring through transferring adult food into food that an offspring can digest. Birds do it by taking the food into their mouth and then digesting it partially and then giving it to their offspring. We do it because the mother transfers adult food to the baby via her breast. Mm-hmm. And those are the similarities that I thought were strong.
Right.
Okay, well, when you look at survival, all creatures, birds in particular, so what they do is they're out in the wild and they're just gathering food and other essential resources, and they're protecting themselves against danger. Pretty obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Reproduction comes into the picture. Those survival functions are then focused on the nest, focused on the family, the offspring, and the mate. And by the way, you'll see that this might sound like it's gender focused. Gender is irrelevant, as we know in our society now. It's really become clear that it's irrelevant. And in fact, in birds, there's some species where the male even broods the eggs and then raises the offspring while the female goes out and brings in food.
Right.
But that's really it. The survival functions have to do with outside the nest behavior, which are to gather food, bring it into the nest, and protect the nest against would-be intruders, protecting by attacking them, by dive bombing them. Now, I have to tell you something. Did a lot of research on this, but there's nothing like real life experience.
Yes.
One day, I got a little too close to a robin's nest. How did I know this? Well, I heard chirping, but then this seemingly huge robin comes right at my face, and I swatted away 3 or 4 times. It kept coming after me. Little bird, big human, didn't matter. Do anything to protect that nest. Finally, I just backed off and that was the end of it. But it's nothing like real life experience to bring it home.
Right.
Inside the nest, the desire to maximize the number of offspring which is the same as happens outside the nest, but it's done in a different way. Inside the nest, every offspring that's survivable has to survive. It doesn't matter if one of those is stronger or weaker, victim or victorious,
right,
meritorious or not. It doesn't matter. And if you think in humans, it happens too. You'll see parents who say their children who are criminals are really good boys, because this is really programmed into birds, programmed to all of us, to make the next generation happen.
Right.
So you have these two kinds of behaviors: outside the nest, survival; inside the nest, reproduction. Another very important thing that happens inside the nest is the drive to take care of the most vulnerable at the time. Think of it. If that weren't programmed into us, into birds, into us, if that weren't programmed in, then we wouldn't take care of the most vulnerable at the time.
Right.
So her has an infant in her arm and a toddler falls down and is bleeding. Well, she's got a dilemma. She's got to somehow figure out how to put that infant down and take care of the one that's bleeding.
Right.
Okay, that sets the stage. The question then is, how is this reflected in humans? Because we're so darn complicated, it's hard to see one thing from another.
Right.
Take the first thing, gathering food for the nest. Well, we gather money. It's better than just gathering food, because we can use it now, we can use it later.
Right.
We also don't like intruders to come into our nest. We have police that keep intruders out of our home, and we have military that keep would-be intruders out of our country.
Right.
These things are pretty basic. Now let's talk about what happens inside the nest, because that's really what's not that recognized. What I've talked about so far about outside the nest, it's pretty superficial. I'll just put it in there for reference.
Right.
What's inside the nest is translated into our world in different ways. For example, we say Americans like the underdog. Well, when you get close to one-on-one, everybody likes the underdog. Everybody takes care of the most vulnerable. Yeah. It's really into us. If you think of charities, good charities, they don't send around flyers with a whole bunch of starving kids. No, one starving, pleading face. And our hearts go out to that child, and often we will give some money to that charity.
Right.
But it's using this innate, genetically determined drive of ours to take care of the most vulnerable. Again, if we didn't take care of the most vulnerable, then the most vulnerable would die. We wouldn't have many people left.
Right.
People left. All right. So now, how does this translate into society now and into civilizations? So let's look at the issues in politics that are going on.
Mm-hmm.
We have the issue of immigration. That's a big issue today.
Yes.
We have the issue of law and order.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the economy, jobs.
Yes.
These tend to clump under what we call conservative or Republican. You can call them what you want. They're determined by basic underlying genetic drives.
Mm-hmm.
The other group of issues has to do with feeding the poor, welfare. It doesn't care about immigration, because remember, it's the outside the nest that cares about keeping it free of would-be intruders. It's just not the job inside the nest. And so people that kind of are more, let's call them more left or liberal, they are disturbed about just the idea of immigration. They're okay with it. Taking care of the vulnerable, we talked about that, welfare. So we can leave it at that, and I'll bring in more examples if we have to.
Right.
We see happening here. So what's different? So the political parties in the past had to do with national issues versus states. Remember, way back in the beginning of this country.
Right.
Other huge one was slavery or not.
Mm-hmm.
Country was torn about that. Got resolved. What we're happening now is we're talking about survival and reproduction. Now, you might not know this, but republics tend not to exist longer than 250 years. We're already a little past that. If you read about civilization as written by anthropologists, you don't have a clear-cut consensus in terms of what makes a civilization fall. For example, if you say, well, this civilization had a drought and, you know, therefore they fell apart, the anthropologists will say, well, you know, they probably had droughts before and they got over them.
Right.
Civilization, well, another civilization came and wiped them out. Well, they probably had trouble like that before and they got over it. They don't have a consensus. Different ones think different things, but they don't have a consensus on that. And if they don't have a consensus, they're not recognizing something.
Right.
And I think
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Is that as a civilization secures survival, they're less focused on that, and they become more focused on inside the nest, reproductive issues. Not unusual. You know, I think it was Lewis and Clark or some of the explorers in America. When they would go out into the wild, once they secured themselves, they built a fort, and then they deal with inside the nest behavior. They'd have their families would come out and they'd have kids, and that would be their little civilization.
Right.
So the question is that what's going on in our country now, in our civilization now? Are we making this transition from survival, now that we think it's really secure, to the reproductive issues? And then, of course, what happens is we fall prey, just like these other civilizations probably did. We fall prey. We forget about the survival issues, and then we don't survive.
Right.
But this is what I think has to do with the fall of civilizations. And it's important to keep in mind because a lot of people are talking about that today.
Yeah.
It's coming in ways. People talk about that. What's happening to us? And if you think about it, we have had pretty secure life from, say, 1991 when the Cold War started.
Right.
Well, let's say that in 1990, the children who were 10 years old started to become politically aware. So from 1990, 10-year-olds and up didn't really live with the fear of the atom bomb coming.
Right.
That's about society. That's a huge percentage of our society, about half.
Yeah.
And so and what do you do about that? Well, I think the first thing to do is recognize it. If this seems to make sense to people, probably refine, or maybe they add or subtract things from it, that's fine.
Right.
Starts to make sense, then the question is, what do you do about it? I can offer my suggestions. Other people will offer theirs. We don't want to have a Cold War again.
Right.
But, you know, it's hard to create a fear of survival. It's hard to create that. If that came, and it came a little bit in 9/11, if you remember.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, 9/11, everybody was hanging out flags. Remember, we all came together as a country. We were afraid of our survival. But there are no more 9/11s just like that. And we don't want 9/11s. We don't want Cold War. How do we do it? Yeah. Some committees will have to think about that. That's pretty much as far as I can take it. I can go get into the details of it a little more. But, you know, it's one thing to be an academic and another to have to solve problems.
Yeah.
In charge have to do. And, you know, if this makes a little bit of sense to them, they'll probably incorporate it into their thinking. But they have to think about this. They do.
I see a huge change in our society, the behaviors of our society. And just in the last decade, things have gotten, it seems worse and worse and worse, the behaviors of individuals and how they react and the level of hatred and people hurting others. And then even when you go back into politics, it is the same thing is happening. Instead of working together as a union, you have two sides. You know, even when you look at the Republicans are knocking heads at one another. They're not working together as a team, and you see the same thing going on the other side. They're not as unified as they could be. You know, they're worried about what the other side is doing and how can we knock them down. But then you have a whole society of people that need help in many different ways, and it's like, you know, our world doesn't seem unified to me. It seems more, you know, people don't have their perspectives in line. They don't see the importance of what should be prioritized and what should not be prioritized. And, you know, I don't know if that's the fear of survival or if that is just ignorance in itself, because we do have a lot of people who feel the need of power. They feel the need to feel recognized. And maybe that goes back to their roots of their childhood. Maybe they weren't recognized as a child. So now they is their time to thrive and prove themselves to themselves, you know, but it just seems like our world is kind of like in shambles. And I don't know, you know, if we categorize that as, you know, a fear to survive, or if we look at it, you know, when you look at society and you look at politics and you look at the way politics has evolved in the last 10 years, you know, what's your perspective on it? The changes, the negative changes, especially.
Well, it's horrid. I mean, I was around when, for example, Reagan and Tip O'Neill, Republican and Democrat, really cooperated. You really didn't hear much dissension. And now people look back at that and wonder why it can't happen again. There isn't the value on teamwork or cooperating. I think what you're talking about, people are kind of selfish about themselves. This one wants to be leader, that one. If the value were on teamwork, there wouldn't be as much dissension within these groups. I'll call them groups of parties, political parties, but there wouldn't be dissension between the two big ones and in between in each of them. You know, it's like a family where the parents argue, and what's the sense in arguing? I mean, isn't a relationship more important? I mean, what are these superficial things we're arguing about? It's a basic relationship. It's important. Well, when there's balance in a family, that is when the outside the nest function, because both parents could do the outside the nest and the inside the nest function, all these varieties we have. But when the outside the nest function isn't working well, and the inside the nest function is demanding more, you have an imbalance.
Yes.
You have arguments and dissension, whatever. When the outside the nest function is doing great, lots of money, whatever, but inside the nest, not really paying attention to their kids or whatever.
Yeah.
It's an imbalance. Same thing exists in society. If you have an imbalance, you go from one to the other. You know, it's like a seesaw.
Yeah.
If the Democrats get in, it's all the Democratic stuff. The Republicans get in, it's all Republican stuff. What about the American stuff? This is, we have to conceive of ourselves as a family.
Right.
We can start to think about balance. Both functions are fine. They're really essential. They have to be in balance. I think that if that point is hammered home, people start to focus on that. And if that's the value, then teamwork and cooperation and compromise, those start to rise. And then the society can really get down to what's going on without all the dissension that we're dealing with today.
How do you get our society, especially in the world of politics, to stop badgering each other and start cooperating with each other? What would be your suggestions? Because it just, you know, I watch it, I listen to it, and it's sometimes it's very upsetting when you see where our society was 10, 20 years ago and you see where it is today. It seems more like a soap opera to me than it does an actual, you know, world of leadership and politics. And what kind of example are we setting for our future generation, the future Z generation, when they see things like this going on? Do they even know what, you know, the right and the wrong way to behave? You have mentors in your home, but then you look at the world and you look at politics and you look at our union and you see how they behave. There's a cross message there, and it could be quite confusing to young children who are developing and getting ready for the big world when they see behaviors like this exemplified in the professional world?
I think you're right. I think, look, our leaders have to lead and show the next generation what the best way to function is. Yes, in the last 10, 20 years, there's been a gradual erosion of that. I think that, you know, it's been said that sunlight is the best antiseptic. I think that if this mentality, this desire for cooperation and balance is brought home, if it's picked up by the media, by other leaders in society, if that becomes the value, then we've got a chance getting together. You know, if the leaders can show, as an example, that they can cooperate, that's great. That's great. Even if the outcome isn't terrific, they've cooperated.
Yes.
And that's, the younger generation has to see that. They can't be fighting each other, because what did Lincoln say? A house divided against itself cannot survive.
That's right. That's right.
So I think that's the first thing is the sunlight, to really bring the issue home. And I can do a little bit of it, but, you know, I think the organized media has to really pick up on it. And then, I don't know, maybe academia, but the media, really, that's the fastest way.
Yeah.
They start to believe this, the message will start to get out there.
Mm-hmm. And I think one of the biggest problems with the media is the media cares more about ratings than they do about the truth. You go to different channels and, you know, you could see which ones they're favoring, and you can see sometimes things are fabricated, and, you know, and really it's confusing, because people, you know, when people listen to the media, whether it's on the internet or it's on TV, if they are loyal to a certain channel, if they say that the sky is black, then the sky is black. If they say the sky is red, the sky is red, you know. But then, you know, people in the media, journalists, reporters, they came into this profession to speak the truth and to make the country a better country. And I think a lot of the you know, you do have a lot of great journalists out there, but then you have people out there that are more worried about making money and attracting ratings too. So it's a cross, you know. And like you said, you have to really, you know, hope that those leaders out there that really believe in speaking the truth and making the world a better place, you know, can really speak loud so they can get the message across to more than one circulated area, but get it across on a broad range, a broad audience, which is the whole United States.
David found a pension that his staff would love. He chose NatWest Cushion because it has a fantastic app that is easy to use. Everyone feels good, except David. He is ecstatic. Take a little more action with a NatWest Cushion Workplace Pension. Tomorrow begins today. Search NatWest Cushion. Capital at risk.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you're right about the media. They tend to want to have ratings among a certain population, and they'll feed that population what it wants to hear to have them continue to listen, buy the products and the ratings. So how do you deal with that? Again, I think it's by starting to put a value on balance, cooperation, however you want to call it. When you start to put a value on that, you've got a chance. Look, I grew up a long time ago, older than you and probably most of your viewers. You know, the media wouldn't be that even-handed, but they wouldn't be destructive of the other side.
Yeah.
You know, they would have a perspective and an attitude, but it's gotten so polarized now that you can't come together. I think one thing that'd be great for people to do, and I try to do it, is to listen to all the media. Is to listen to both sides, all three, four, five sides, whatever. I mean, there's so much out there to listen to.
Right.
And as you start to listen to more, you really start to, you know, the truth is somewhere in between all these.
Yes.
Things. I think that's another way to do it. It has to be encouraged, and really the message has to come home to the leaders, the media leaders, the political leaders, and then others will start to follow. Really. This country's great, but it if it makes mistakes, it's vulnerable. And there are other countries that are just, you know, waiting to take us down. They're in the survival area still.
Right.
They're there, and they like to eat up any other country they can.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to be like an academic who lays out the problem and doesn't have great solutions. Or if I have them, I can't make them happen by myself.
Right. You know? I think your ideas are very valid and very beneficial. You know, I think we need to really cooperate as a team, because that teamwork and that cooperation has kind of left. It's like everybody, you know, is at each other's throats. And we need to get to the point where, like you mentioned, back when Reagan was president, you know, both sides were working as a team. You know, they might have differences of opinions of what should be important and what should be secondly, you know, on the second shelf, but they worked as a team and they came to compromise. And that's what people have to learn, is that it's okay to compromise. Compromise is a good thing. You know, it's not about winning or losing. It's about coming to a constructive compromise that's beneficial, that will benefit everyone in some way or another.
I think that's it. I mean, I think shows like yours, that's a way. This is a medium, you know, podcast world. In fact, it's pretty strong nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, people watch it like they watch, like they binge watch Netflix. Some people are watching podcasts all day long. And that becomes a source of their information. Their newspapers are pretty gone. And so right now we're part of this. You know,
right.
We're part of this hopefully movement. If people start to crop up in different podcasts, whatever, and starts to have an effect.
Now, have you?
So it's you. So you're part of it. You can do the solution.
I can do the solution. I can work on it. I'll need your help.
I would love
to come out with a solution, but we need people like you also who could actually make people see things on a more realistic, you know, basis.
Sure, I hope so. I mean, I do. I mean, that's what I kind of want to leave to the next generation. I'm beyond the point where making a lot of money is important. My kids are grown. I don't have to worry that much about immediately about my own needs.
Right.
And I really want to leave this message as my contribution, my legacy, whatever you want to call it. That's why I'm really happy to be on your show, other shows, whatever. Get the book out and try to get this message out. Basically, it's very simple. Balance, cooperation, compromise, however you want to really characterize it. Yeah.
When you see, you know, from a psychology point of view, when you see people filled with so much hatred and anger, those people out there that are you know, you have conspiracy theories, you have people that have been brainwashed by, you know, other people or groups, and or they just are, you know, so angry. And how do you get people to let go of that anger and to focus and change their perspective to compromise? Because there are so many people out there that are angry and they're resorting to violence, and they're resorting to verbal abuse, and they think that they're going to get something positive by doing these things. And how, you know, from your own perspective and from what you've seen and from what you've learned in the course of your years, what's your idea of making these people that you see, well, you know, like, look at what happened when they, you know, invaded in Congress, you know, like, how do you get these people to let go of their anger? Like, some of the people who actually got, they went to court and they had to go to jail for a little time. They came out and they realized, oh my God, what did I do? But it took them, you know, discipline and punishment to come to the realization that, hey, my behavior wasn't beneficial. It didn't benefit me and it didn't benefit society. But these people who are still out there that haven't had any type of apprehension or discipline or someone saying, hey, this isn't right, or and show them, you know, a way in their head. It's embedded in their heads right now, the anger, the hatred, and the acts of violence. This is the way to go. This is how I'm going to change people's way of looking at things. I'm going to force them to be like me. How do you make those people change?
Okay. You know, we're starting to get into a little bit of another topic.
Okay.
But it's related. The question is, so we've already talked about why our country is in danger of dissolving, really, because of this civilization cycle. Things are happening now that would never be tolerated 20, 30, 40 years ago.
Right.
I'll give you an example. RCA, this is a long time ago, 40 years ago, more, came out with a TV that could record what a family said in its living room. That lasted on the market a few months. People would not hear of that, and it was taken off the market.
Right.
Today, you have these devices that listen to everything we do.
Yeah.
And people got used to it. They don't seem to care. And that's that mentality. It's not that they're saying things that are that profound, but it's the mentality that, yeah, okay, if everybody knows what, you know, finally I'll make the compromise. Sure, they can know what I want to watch my TV show, so I'll let them know what I'm talking about in my living
room.
What's going on now is our vulnerability is being exploited. It's being exploited in ways that aren't that recognized. A lot of the dissension that's going on is not spontaneous. It seems spontaneous, but it's directed. And if you can see that, can see what it is, you've got a better chance.
Right.
So now I'm going to sound a little bit like a conspiracy theorist. Okay. The Black Lives Matter movement came in. The three people that organized it acknowledged that they were trained Marxists. And people kind of let that go. What's a trained Marxist? Well, this is a communist desire going back to the beginnings of Russian and Chinese communism. And that is to undermine every other country and make it like theirs.
Right.
America's a big kahuna. So initially, the big difference in societies was between the workers and the capitalists. However, in a lot of countries, there's economic mobility. So you can't really split the society that well on that, but you can split it on race.
Right.
That's what's going on today. Everything is race. You're a racist. I'm a racist. I can't help but being a racist. I'm born a racist. I'll die. Everything. That's not by accident. It's happening. It's getting more widespread because we're vulnerable. We're vulnerable. These things might have been tried in the 30s and the 60s, but they didn't go that far. Now people are really concerned. They'll really go far. There are various others that other aspects of this that are going on. And if you really want to tie it together, you can watch some videos by a guy named Yuri Bezmenov, B-E-S-M-E-N-O-V, B-E-Z-M-E-N-O-V. He's an ex-KGB agent who'd split small countries for the KGB.
Wow.
But he defected to America. And he lays out in his YouTube videos what the goals are, what the techniques are. And if you look at them from that perspective, it ties together so much of what's going on in this country.
Wow.
We are really vulnerable. We are really in danger of just collapsing.
That's
unfortunately
scary.
There's no halfway. It's going to be a waterfall, and then all of us are having a great time right now, and all of a sudden, you know, country's not there as we know it.
Yeah.
So the more sunlight, the better.
Right. And that's where I think it breaks down, going back to the more sunlight, the better. The more good leaders that come out and really wake up and shake up the country, the more these vulnerable, negative vulnerable aspects will maybe somehow turn around and people will see things from a different light. And I think that's starting to happen a little bit. You know, people are starting to see things, you know, and realize, you know, wow, you know, this isn't right. You know, this isn't normal. You know, this shouldn't happen in government. And I think we are starting to wake up some people, and, you know, people are realizing that this is not the way to go. You know, but I still think we have a lot of work to do, because we've pivoted, you know, and it's going to take some time before we could actually make the road straight again.
I agree with you. I think people are starting to wake up, but they don't know how to put it all together right now. That's okay. It'll start to come out. But people have had enough of this internal strife.
Yeah.
It doesn't reverse overnight. It didn't happen overnight. It doesn't reverse overnight. But when we see examples of people realizing we shouldn't be a house divided.
Right.
Then, and how come we became that way? And, you know, how can we avoid it in the future? When people start to question that, that should be picked up on,
yes,
and amplified. And then people see it elsewhere in the society.
Yeah.
That's sunlight. That's sunlight, the best disinfectant.
What I do like is, if you notice, that you'll even see comedians now getting involved, and they will crack jokes, but they're serious, but they're making it funny so people pay attention. But yet, in a sense, there's an underlying message that they're trying to get across to people, so it sticks in their head and maybe puts a couple of light bulbs on in the house.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, they're good ones and bad ones, but the good ones, they do that. They comment where nobody else wants to get involved.
Yeah.
And they use humor as their, they use humor as their means, mm-hmm. right? That's fine. People can laugh, but they go home and they think about it. If you have a big sign that says do something or other, let it go. But when it, you know, humor reaches your heart.
Yeah.
To make someone laugh is you've given them some pleasure. That's meaningful. You've created a relationship with your audience, if you're the comedian, or with the comedian, if you're the audience.
Right.
And so you're, you know, they can bring home these thoughts more easily because of that.
Right.
Humor is one of the best techniques. It's hard to do it in an organized way, because a lot of comedians maybe aren't that organized.
Right.
When they hit it right, people know they've hit it right.
Right.
They know they've hit it, you know, and it makes people think.
That's
when they start to think.
Now, tell me a little about your book, because I want to hear more about your book.
Okay. So the book, Path to Political Peace, has to do with a lot of what I've said. First, it lays out this underlying difference that it's genetic, and it's between survival functions outside the nest and reproductive functions inside the nest. And that's the war. It then starts to look at the various issues of society. I've mentioned a couple of them, but it starts to realize that the left and right, the issues are clumped in terms of survival on one side and reproduction on the other. So then they'll start to hopefully believe that there's something to this. They start to see it. That's the beginning of sunlight. Then I translate it into civilization to make it a bigger picture. But really, I'm happy to look at with what's going on now, that there has to be a value on balance.
Right.
The more that is, the more we've got a chance of achieving it. It doesn't mean that it's all, certainly it doesn't mean it's all one way or the other. And it doesn't mean everything's kumbaya either. But it just means that there's a value placed on teamwork, compromise, cooperation, balance. You can say it in so many different ways, but we all get it. But it has to be strengthened. That's really the message of the book. That's the path to political peace. Sunlight.
I think that it's so important for people to read a book like that, because I really think people really need to understand that we need cooperation, we need peace, we need to be able to work as a team, you know. And if we're going to strengthen our country, and if we're going to be one of the great countries and strong countries that remain like that, we need to cooperate and be adjoined as one, and not go in different directions. Because once the puzzle gets messed up, you know, you don't have a puzzle anymore, and you just have
very
a bunch
hard
of
to
pieces.
Put it back together.
Yeah,
that's right. Bunch of pieces. Yeah, it's nothing. You're right. I mean, that's.
Go ahead.
No, I think that's the answer. Is that's where the sunlight has to shine, on the need for balance, cooperation, teamwork, all these things that people know about. People know what we're talking about. People have been on teams, whether it's, you know, sports teams or drama club teams or orchestra. Right. People know how to cooperate. Just that it's not as valued as it used to be.
Yeah. Very true. Where can we find this book? Has the book launched already, or is it about
no,
to
no,
launch?
The book's in process.
Okay.
Yeah. If you want to know about the basics of it, that is inside the nest, outside the nest, whatever, on Kindle, there's a little monograph. I call it the primer because it's really pretty quick. And it's called, I gave it a jazzy, juicy title. It's called Sex in Politics.
I like it.
Sex in Politics. So it's not about salacious sex, but it's about the rest of sex, which is raising the next generation.
Yeah.
Which is feeding it, giving it morals, values, strength, whatever.
Yes.
That's what it's about. So it has a juicy title. People remember that. It's on Kindle.
I love
it. And that lays it out quickly. It's a quick read because it's really a summary.
Right.
So I think if people want a little record of what we've talked about, they can get it there. It doesn't go that far because I haven't developed by that. When I wrote it, I hadn't developed it enough.
Right.
But it's a start. It's a start.
And when do you know that when it will probably be launched? Or do you have an idea probably when the book will be out this year?
Well, you know, I hoped it would get out before the election, but it's looking like not.
Okay.
It's looking like it's okay. I mean, I think if it gets out and if it hits, if people start to look at life this way, then there'll be enough time for discussion and a chance to maybe incorporate some of its ideas into reality, into our real lives.
Right. And your website, can you tell everybody your website address?
Sure. It's melvinlaurie.com. Just my first and last name, Melvin with a Y, like my mother would call me when I misbehaved. Okay. The only other people that do that are telemarketers because they don't know. I don't like that name.
That's so funny.
So it's Melvin Laurie and it's LURIE.com. That's it.
And if you had to really give a couple of takeaways, everything that we discussed in this conversation, what would be the main important factors that you'd like to emphasize to the listeners today that you would really want them to constructively keep in their minds so they can really think about what went on in this conversation and the important factors that can be very meaningful if applied to their lives?
I think that what we're missing is the understanding that these the reproduction aspects of life, they're having an effect, but we don't recognize them as such. They're harder to recognize.
Yeah.
Our sense of caring about the vulnerable. Yes, we have it, but people don't, I think, see that it's so fundamental to
right.
our lives. But, you know, then again, it can be, all these things can be driven to a ruinous end. That's where balance comes in.
Right.
You can't all of one thing or all of the other. You have to draw the line somewhere and have, you know. So I think the idea of balance, I think that if people use the analogy of the family, a lot of times that's used, you know, in politics and people say, well, it's different, you know, country's different from the family. It's really not the same thing. It's very much the same thing.
Yeah.
Might not be recognized. It's very much the same thing. If you have an imbalance in a family, not good. Not good right. for the kid, not good for either party. If you have a value on balance, cooperation, and teamwork, if that's your value, then you have something to strive for that's more important than this issue or that issue.
Right.
That was my takeaway. Balance, cooperation, and don't focus so much on what the differences are. Try
right.
to see these two. Come to the middle and value that.
That's so important. That's great advice. I This has been an amazing time. You know, Dr. Lurie, I thank you so much for coming on this show. I hope you can come back and we can share some more light about some of these topics, because I think it's very important. You know, we've come to a time in our society where, you know, it's very upsetting when I see what is going on in the political world and even in our society as people are, you know, reacting in such, you know, negative ways. You know, you have so many people out there that could handle these situations in a more productive manner, but yet they're going about it in the wrong way. And, you know, like you said, we need to come to, you know, a middle where there is teamwork, and we have to come to compromise, and I think, you know, the more we discuss about it, the more we shed light on it, the more advice we give, and maybe waking up people to see if we keep behaving in this way, what is the outcome? It's not going to be a good outcome. And do we want that outcome? Because if we don't, then change needs to be made, because, you know, we live in the present. But let's look at the past, and let's look at the present right now and think about, if these actions continue, where are we going to be in the next 5 or 10 years? And we don't want to see dictatorship in the United States. We don't want to see a country that is, you know, like back in the conservative time when you had the North against the South. There is no reason to have that type of behavior and repeat ourselves. We should look at our past. We should be proud of who we are, and we should learn from our past, you know, the good and the bad, and use it constructively to build a more positive future, you know. And, you know, and you see people taking down statues, and you see people taking down, not letting people read books and this and that. But this is part of our country. This is part of our history. And you can't change history, but we can learn from history. And we could be proud of the good things that happen, and we could learn from the mistakes, and we can improve our country by looking at our mistakes and changing it in a constructive way, I think.
I think you said it better than I could. Thank you. It's the message. It's important. Doesn't matter who says it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you really put it out there.
You know, I really enjoyed having you on the show. You brought up a topic that we don't, you know, talk about too much, but it needs to be talked about more. And I'm so glad that you're writing this book. I'm so glad that you have your website up, and I'm so glad that you're doing these talks and really shedding some light. And, you know, it really needs to be emphasized more, because, you know, people like you who are shedding, you know, and shedding light, like you said, you know, we may wake up some minds, and we actually may encourage some leadership to be even more aggressive with their messages. And hopefully, you know, talks like this will instigate that.
Yeah, I hope so. It's one step at a time, many one, steps.
But, yeah,
baby but no steps. Backtracking.
Exactly. Well, Dr. Yeah. Lore, this has been a pleasure. Thank you so much for being on the show, and I hope to see you in the future.
Well, likewise, it's really been fun for me, and I hope it's been fun for your audience.
Well, it's definitely been fun for me, and I'm sure they had as much fun as we did. So thank you so much. You have a great day.
Sure. Okay, you too. Take care. Bye.
You too. Bye-bye.